残酷な天使のように少年よ神話になれ。
Previously on Neon Genesis Evangelion, during a synchronization test deep within Nerve headquarters, Eriel attacks. The microscopic alien begins to infect the Magi supercomputer, attempting to set off the self-destruct sequence. Ritsuko is able to force the alien to evolve into a benign state by hacking into the Magi, saving the day. What's that? We're at the midway point of the series? Time for a clip show to catch us up on what's been happening over the last 13 episodes. Don't worry though, because we also squeeze in another synchronization test where Unit Zero begins to go berserk and tries to kill Ritsuko. That's mysterious. Kaiji, having been revealed as a double agent for the Japanese government, who you may recall really doesn't care for Nerve, spills the beans to Misato that there's an angel at the deepest level of Central Dogma. Not just any angel, but according to Kaji, the first angel, Adam. And now our story continues.
We interrupt this program to bring you...
A giant of limitless power. What would happen, they wondered? Why not try? Nuclear fission. To build the first atomic bomb. Man has released from within the atom's heart not one, but many giants.
Welcome to Tokyo Signals, the bite-sized kaiju podcast for all your tumbling down needs. I'm Rob, and joining me live, trapped inside of an infected entry plug, is a very special guest. Would you mind introducing yourself?
I'm Dan, commonly known as Revised Dan on Twitter. I'm an artist, Evangelion stan, Godzilla lover. I do World of Monsters on Twitter, which is a fan redesign verse of basically every single Japanese giant monster property you can find, and that's about it about me. I like to draw.
I really loved your Shin Godzilla with this weird like mountainous. I remember he's like his tail is so tall that you got like that corona of clouds around it.
Yes,
loved that. And also you're just absolutely a horrifying Geno or Zilla. Which had like that.
A lot of people hated that.
That sack that was just like producing more Zillas. It's like, oh boy. I mean, that's accurate, but whoa.
I like to push my my designs as far as I can go, and if it annoys people, that's fine. But I've got new stuff coming tonight, actually.
Oh.
Which is irrelevant to when the podcast releases.
I guess
May 22nd. There's some new stuff.
Well, I'm thrilled to see that, and if you've not seen that when you're listening to this, which we'll be recording. we're recording this a little early because we've had so many like back-to-back months that like unfortunately the schedule got all messed up. So this episode's being delayed by about a month. Hopefully no insane news happens in between then and now that makes this seem, you know, weird and dated. But check out World of Monsters.
Thank you.
But shall we move on to the plot?
Yeah.
Today we'll be discussing episode 16, 17, and 18. Thanks, Dan, for sticking around for three episodes this time around. Things are getting bleak, folks, so hold on to a happy memory. Shinji, filled with all the piss and vinegar of an overconfident teen, is ready to finally take the lead. Sure hope the next angel is a normal kaiju he can just shoot to death. Oh no! A new angel is striking Tokyo 3? What are the chances? Laelial, a black and white sphere, looms through the sky, causing buildings to sink into its inky black shadow. Shinji attempts to take the sphere down, but is absorbed into the angel's silhouette. The team at Nerve works frantically to try and save our teenage protagonist, but is unable to come up with a solution as Laelial's physical form is an ultra-thin space supported by an inward-directed AT field, the inside of which is an imaginary space called the Sea of Dirac. and is most likely connected to another universe. With all options exhausted, they plan to destroy the Angel by dropping their remaining silo of N2 bombs into the Angel's shadow. Breaking reality with explosions, by the way, is absolutely one of my favorite tropes. It's very underutilized. While inside the Angel, Shinji travels inward and explores himself, confronting his grief, and exploring the concept of the you that exists within others' hearts. Struggling with the dread of being perceived while communicating with the Angel? As his oxygen runs out, he suddenly becomes aware of another presence inside the Ava, the consciousness of his own mother. The Ava suddenly rips its way out of the black and white sphere, saving Shinji's life, but leaving him scarred by the experience. Later, at a North American branch of NERV, AV Unit 4 is fitted with a reconstructed S2 engine in order to give this unit unlimited power. But the test goes awry, causing everyone and everything in an 89-kilometer radius, that's 55 miles for American listeners, yeah, to vanish in a flash of light. America, tired of this tomfoolery, sends the remaining AV Unit 3 back to Japan via crucifixion. While en route to America, Unit 3 comes into contact with a cloud that sparks to life, mysteriously. Remember that for later. It'll be important in a bit. With this Ava on its way, Shinji's classmate Toji Suzuhara is selected as a new pilot, the Fourth Children. As soon as Toji takes the first test run of Ava Unit 3, the fungal angel Bardriel infects the Ava and begins assuming direct control. The three remaining Ava units are launched to deal with the new enemy, but Rei and Asuka are quickly dispatched, leaving only a shell-shocked Shinji to deal with the situation. Grappling with his own experience from Laeliel, and aware that a human is trapped inside the Ava still, he is unable to bring himself to harm this new angel. Gendo, furious with his son's failure, activates the dummy plug system. The AI control takes over Unit 1 and brutally disembowels Unit 3, forcing Shinji to watch. In a final moment of brutality, Unit 1 removes the entry plug that houses Toji Suzuhara and crushes it. A devastated Shinji looks on, unable to stop his participation in what he considers a murder. Alright, now it's time for us to move on to the characters. Yes, that's right, we're bringing it back. I've got three characters I want to discuss, because they're all pretty important in these this, you know, little segment here. I guess technically there's one extra character that would be important to talk about, Shinji's mom, but I'll discuss her in more detail in the next episode, actually, because we actually see a little bit more of her. So instead, we'll be talking about Shinji's classmates. We've got Toji Suzuhara, we've got Kinsuke, and then we've got Hikari. They're basically kind of like in order of importance in the plot, but I think they're all really interesting characters, and I did want to discuss them because they do have like an impact on the world, specifically Suzuhara's character. So, Suzuhara, he's like the big, tough guy, brash anime boy with an impeccable taste in like windbreakers. Love it.
Yeah.
He's introduced in episode 2. His little sister is someone who was injured while Shinji was fighting the first angel because he didn't know what he was doing. Bunch of buildings got smashed. And apparently his sister off screen was injured. And at first he just really, really hates Shinji, and it like they have like a whole episode dedicated to them kind of like punching their way to friendship, which is, yeah, you know, very anime.
Yeah.
He's got a big old crush, as does Kinsuke, on Misato, because, you know, it's a cool older woman who lets him over to her house every once in a while. So we do see that he becomes the fourth child or children, as they say in the anime, in the Netflix, yeah, dub, which sounds weird to me because I guess I always said like child instead of children.
Yeah.
So in the show, he survives this big climactic battle with the loss of his leg. And then comes like he is alive and like he's in like episode 19 for like the first half, And like they're talking to him and like he's, you know, recovering from the event, sans a leg. But like he doesn't show up after that. He doesn't like, you know, like they say he evacuates with the rest of the kids like in a later episode when things get really bad. But like, I don't know. It kind of feels like he's super important. And then it's like,
it feels like,
like
it feels like sometimes he's a bit of a plot device, isn't he? Like for this arc and then he's gone.
It's absolutely like, I think this is the first time truly that you can tell that like the threads of like narrative plots are going to be left on the table. Like, like we're running out of time. We need to get the episode out. You know, like this is when it starts to, you know, become, I think, a show that, like, when I say I think that, like, the big mystery is a distraction, this feels like more of a narratively important thing because it's someone who's personally close to Shinji, who is personally injured by Shinji, who then seems like he would be involved in Shinji's, like, growth afterwards, at least, like, in a cohesive story. But then
it's such a shame.
And just like for him to just kind of fade into the background after kind of like being peppered in as important throughout like these earlier episodes, the first half, you know, he's seen pretty regularly either hanging out with Shinji, you know, obviously there's the fight with Shinji early on, and this kind of like all these like characters except for Hikari basically after this arc stop being in the story. I mean, that being said, there's like after this there's seven episodes left, so we are past the halfway point, but it is strange that like, because the main point ultimately of the show is Shinji's growth as a person. And for that to be less the focal point after, you know, a certain point, it's just, it's strange, you know. Speaking of strange, let's talk about our war weeb, Kinsuke.
One of my favorite characters.
I love this dude. He's, I mean, he's basically like a nerd for, like wartime stuff. And the, in this episode, he's
like me as a kid, actually.
Oh,
like,
yeah?
Like, I was very similar, like, until I ended up where I am politically today. I loved the army. I was obsessed with, like, war, and I still sort of am. I love looking at like war tech and like stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it just, he reminds me of me. I would definitely be, I would definitely be like wanting to be, in the EVA. I would be gagging to be in it and like that. This would be me. I'd be camping out in the forest. I did with a toy gun. I was in the army cadets for years. So like, very embarrassing, but
that's really interesting. Like he's I think he is like a really interesting and fun character. Like one of the earlier episodes, we didn't cover this, but like you, like Shinji just finds him the first time Shinji quits like being an Ava pilot. He finds Kinsuke just out in the woods just camping with like army surplus goods, you know. And he's kind of like the insight to military tech that, you know, other people don't have. And in this episode specifically, he mentions his father and like his coworkers were all freaked out at the disappearance of Ava Unit 4 that like blew up in America. So it's like, oh, so his dad is somehow connected to the military or NERV specifically. We don't really get to know what. Like,
I think my interpretation is because, like, obviously, I don't know if, like, this is ever explicitly mentioned, but almost everybody in Tokyo 3 is, like, connected to NERV in some way. And so, and also all the kids are there to become potential pilots. So, like, I presume he's deaf. His dad is probably some guy who's some random guy. It would be cool to develop that further. But once again, you know, there's not a lot of time.
That is one of the big twists that they actually reveal in these episodes and then clarify in a later one, is like every single one of Shinji's like co-students is someone who could potentially pilot an Ava. And we're going to talk a little bit about how that works when we get to Ava Unit 4 or Ava Unit 3 and why that's like deeply worrying. But like the, yeah, like I think you're right. I think like, yeah, everyone in Tokyo 3 just, it's like a military industrial city, which, you know, explains why it's like super high tech. And then anytime you get outside of like Tokyo 3, it's like rural Japan, you know, like it's still like the iconography that like, you know, normal kind of looking, which you imagine with the pristine, you know, like anime backdrop, which we do see during the Ava 3 fight a lot. It's, again, another character that I think is really, really fun, and I sure wish he had more development. I know in the manga, both Suzuhara and Kensuke are more prominent, although Suzuhara actually dies when his pod gets crushed,
which I think makes so much more sense. Because the manga was written, I've got the first volume over there. I haven't actually read later volumes, but I know there's plots and stuff.
Yeah.
But I know that the manga was released before the show.
It didn't finish until after. So I think they had a chance to kind of revise certain script points. I mean, one of the major things is like, you know, Suzuhara dies. So like, because like basically is just the same as if he lives with how they treat him in this. He's essentially dead. He has a moment in episode 19 where he seems to either like Pacific Rim drift with Shinji, or maybe he just overhears a conversation between Shinji and Rei. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But he's like, you know, he's dreaming and he's like standing in like a train, which is Shinji's internal dialogue always happens in these trains.
Yeah.
So like, I was like, oh, that's really interesting. I wonder what they're going to do with that. And the answer was nothing. We're just going to move on.
It's such like, it's one of those things where I don't even think the Rebirth films have really.
Yeah.
Like the films have ever really solved that issue either. Yeah. That's a whole other host of fish to talk about.
I do. Yeah. Like I don't know much about the Rebirth movies. I do know that they recreate this battle between Unit 3 and Unit 1. But it's like he grows extra arms instead of his arms just getting long and gangly.
It looks very cool.
I've seen the pictures. It does look very rad. Yeah, the last character I want to talk about is Hikari, who is like the class rep. We don't get a lot of information on her, but she does have a very cute crush on Suzuhara. And, you know, I guess the implication is that things go fine for them. They leave, you know, and like they have a moment of connection in the hospital in episode 19. And then we don't see Suzuhara at all ever again. But Hikari is kind of like the polite like class rep archetype from other animes, where she's just like making sure people get their like schoolwork. She's like, make sure, like, you know, okay, you gotta do your like class responsibilities. And later we do see her like when things get very bad for Asuka in literally like two or three episodes, like Asuka goes to live with Hikari, and it's like she's like, okay, you can stay with me, I guess.
This seems like a lovely person brought into a horrible situation.
She really like, it does make the last episodes when we see like Shinji daydreaming about what it would be like just to live a normal high school life. Like all the more bittersweet when you have like the reboot or not the reboot even, but the end of Evangelion movies where it's just like, no, actually the path is way different. Now he's really angry. again, another character that I think is like really interesting and has like, you know, I mean, I guess she's like one of the more archetypical characters being like that class rep kind of like do all your homework and I have a crush on the cute boy teehee characters, but she stands out as that archetype when you have everyone else who is like supposed to be like a broken version of an archetype, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Like she is one of the few like non-subversions in a series, which is built for subverting like expectations and genre. Like,
yeah.
I mean, there's, like, I don't think she's a bad character. I think she's a good character.
And, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really have too much to say about her other than she is always, like, she seems like she is one of those supportive characters. There's one of those, everybody has a friend who you can rely on, and she seems like that sort of somehow reluctant for Asuka.
And oh, yeah.
Obviously, her relationship with Toji is something that, like, I find it really, like, quite upsetting in episode 18 where she's doing her food because he always likes to eat, like, her food, and she doesn't know what's happened. I think that's that's quite a nice moment, and we've all thought about, like, moments like that when something horrible happens and what you were doing and it wasn't great afterwards. So
yeah,
it's quite a relatable feeling. I don't know.
No, so when she, like, makes the meal for him and he's off, like, basically getting ready to be the, like, new pilot for AV Unit 3.
Yeah.
And so she comes in and Asuka is sitting there, who she's already upset with, like, you know, the fact that, like, the idiot that she doesn't like is now going to be piloting an Ava with her. But she she basically, like, accepted it. She was fine with it. And I love, so every, like, the big conflict of 17 and 18 is we can't tell Shinji that his his friend is piloting a robot, and everyone goes about it in different ways. Misato is, like, scared and doesn't want to tell him. Rei is like, I'm gonna talk to, like, Susahara first and have, like, a moment with him. And Asuka finds out, and her response is, I'm sure he already knows. And then just, like, she does not, like even attempt to communicate any of that information. She's just like, oh, well, if I found out, then yeah, surely he already knows. I don't care. Whatever. Yeah.
When in reality, she probably does care.
Yeah.
And then obviously she finds out that he doesn't know when they're in the AV units, and she goes to say, and, you know, and fate gets in the way.
Yeah, that also is kind of strange. We'll probably talk about that in least favorite moments and whatnot. Or favorite moments, perhaps. But yeah, shall we move on to talking about the monster design?
Hell yeah.
All right. So we've got one of the coolest designs and then one of the more, like, a fun inversion, right? So I'm going to try and say this correctly. We've got Lilleel, like a zebra ball that floats in the air, and then this thin shadow on, like, the circular, like, shadow that floats on the ground. To be more direct,
great job. Great job there describing it and pronouncing it. That's really good.
So they explain it in the show, and I wrote down in the notes what it's called, but it's a Didaxi. It's an impossible thing. It's an impossible number that is maintained by two inverted AT fields that keep it collapsed within itself. So I love that. It's, I don't know if you're familiar with D&D, but it's like a portable hole.
Yes. Yeah. I'm slightly familiar with D&D. So yeah. It's just that impossible sci-fi babble, which sounds really plausible and
you're like,
makes sense within the context. Yeah, you're like, I understand that. I did physics, for GCSE, whatever.
Yeah, I know, absolutely. Yeah, an impossibly dense circle. I love what this thing does. Like, when it actually starts to attack, this, like, shadow spreads out on the ground, and you see buildings and AV Unit 1 sink into it. And just, like, they have these big shots where they pull back and you see this weird zebra colored, like, I say, like, zebra, it's a black orb covered in these thin, random twisting white stripes, like a maze over a sphere. It's beautiful. And so you'll see hovering in the air, and then all around it, these buildings are, like, turning, like, you know, slightly sinking into the ground like quicksand. It's so anime that it's just like, it's an impossible science project. It's this eldritch horror. And then to, like, understand that it's like, no, like, we figured it out. The angel is the shadow that sphere above it is the shadow it casts. What the hell?
I love it.
It's so good.
But then when Unit 1 bursts out, it bursts out of the shadow.
Of the shadow.
Which makes no fucking sense.
It's so cool, though. Good.
And there's the blood, and it's just like, why is it bleeding? It's a shadow. But it really is incredible.
Yeah, that sequence of like you see the shadow start to rip and crack as AV Unit 1 starts to break free, and it's like all red inside. It's like, ooh, that's spooky. Because when Shinji's inside of it and he turns on the like cameras to see what's up, it's all white. It's a blank white space around him, you know? And so, yeah, like it starts to crack and you think like, because you see like, you know, like blood starts to leak out of the shadow. And it's like, that's weird. Like when I first watched this, I expected to see like, you know, AV Unit 1's hand break out of the shadow, but no. Or break out of the thing on the ground, but no, it breaks out of the floating sphere and rips it in half. It's too cool.
Yeah, it's like in a show with some of the most incredible imagery going, that is like stand out of him like breaking out. And then obviously, it's just because I've just read this quite a cool thing actually. I'm just sort of scanning page while I'm so obviously inside when Shinji's inside the angel, he's being spoken to by a younger version of himself, which is apparently supposed to be the angel talking to him.
That's
and sort of like deciphering him.
Episode 17 starts with Misato having this conversation with Sele, and they're like, or Seal or Zeal or however, like literally I've heard like every other way of saying it, but they're having this like conversation with her and they're like, so did he communicate with the angel? Was the angel trying to communicate with him? Does the angel have a heart and a soul? And like, when you're just listening to that, it's kind of like, that's such a weird way of putting all these questions. But then, like, Sele's weird mystery is supposed to be, like, spooky. I just wish that they maybe had have done that a little bit better by just having it be Shinji talking to Misato about that.
Yeah.
Which would have, I think, been more impactful, frankly. You know, because, like, you can, again, have, like, that hospital scene, which a lot of this is about unfamiliar ceilings. And, you know, like, it's clear they had a communication. And it's clear that he explained, I was talking to myself. And it is like he's, you know, again, we're in that inner, that headspace where he's sitting in a train. And he's talking to this little, like, kid version of himself. And I'll talk about it more, actually, in a little bit. But one of the concepts that brings up is something that I struggled with so much as, like, a teen. And like, it absolutely makes sense, like putting it in these terms. But even when I watched it when I was younger, this flew right over my head. I was like,
exactly.
When is this going to get to violence again? You know, I was just like waiting for
literally,
it.
Yeah, literally. And it was only later on when, because I suffer very similarly with the idea of like, like, what? How am I interpreted by other people?
Yeah.
Like, how do people view me? And I think, out of everything I've watched, I think maybe that the way young Shinji addresses that, like with no real outcome, no real answer, is like, is extremely like, it speaks to me in a way not much else has done. And
absolutely.
I think it's really interesting as well, because it sort of like puts a little bit of like self-awareness that the angel is sort of tapping into Shinji's mind, and sort of trying to figure out him. And like that, like, I don't know if that, it just seems quite amazing. Like, I don't know. Sorry, I'm rambling a little bit. I ramble.
Because that's exactly how A, I felt, and B, how I first like talked about this. I then spent like a month thinking about it, but like, absolutely. I guess I'll dip into it right now. The angel says like, what are you afraid of? You know, it's like asking him, and he's like, well, I'm afraid of being hurt by others. And it's like, no. Like, what are you afraid of? He's like, I'm afraid of myself. And it's like, no, you're afraid of the you that exists in other people's hearts. There's the Shinji in Asuka's heart. There's the Shinji in Gendo's heart. There's the Shinji in, you know. And essentially what it's saying is the perception, you're worried about how others perceive you and what it is that they perceive you as. And that thing that they see is just as real as the you perceive. But you can't change that. You can only, and like, really, this is the first time the real core message is delivered by an angel. And it essentially is like just starting to pick away at like what the ending two episodes are supposed to be about. But because everyone is watching it waiting for the fun, cool violence to start, because it cuts over to like, there's a weird impossible, like, you know, shadow thing. We're going to drop every single nuke on it to like blow it up. And we're going to throw our AT fields into it to kind of like break it open for a second to try and save Unit 01. It's like, oh, wow, that's a really cool message. It just gets washed away because like then the next sequence is it ripping, and it's like one of the coolest visual moments in the show.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think that really cool note gets pushed back by what's happening.
I think that's one of the weaknesses of the show being like only 25 minute episodes. And when I introduced my friend to the show a couple of months ago, I did say to her, there's going to be some things that are just going to go right over your head, and you're going to think, she's probably going to think, oh God, Dan, what the hell sort of shit do you like watching? Why do you like this shit? And I'm like, you need to watch it.
Trust me.
You need to watch it like 7 times, and then you get it. And then you'll think it's the greatest show ever made, which, you know, listeners can decide whether I'm insane or not for thinking that about my favorite media, because I do think it's one of those shows that definitely needs more than one rewatch.
Yeah.
And just to take in, like, you can do one viewing where you're just taking in all the incredible visuals and violence, and the next you can take in all the heavy emotional performances and messages that the show dots every 5 minutes.
Oh yeah.
Bomb on you.
Absolutely. No, I, yeah. And this angel is probably one of the best at doing that. I feel like other angels fall definitely a little flat because there's not that like introspection, but this one nails it. Speaking of being nailed, let's talk about Unit 3, who is transported via crucifixion to Japan. One of the coolest, like, man, the next time I order anything, just send it via crucifixion, nail it to a giant cross.
Amazon drones are going to be crucifying your packages.
So this is AVIT Unit 3, which was built in America along with Unit 4. And like I said earlier, Unit 4 got an S2 engine installed and then erased reality. Which is, you know, not great. So as they're flying it to America, it gets infected by this alien in that weird cloud that like sparks a little bit and becomes Bardiel. Bardiel? So this Ava is like the one that's referred to in the masculine terms. And you can really see that specifically in the head and the torso, because like all the others have this kind of like very lean, thin look to them, whereas like this one, he's a more beefy boy.
Could that be a nice bit of commentary on the United States of America there, possibly?
Very true.
I don't know, like, because America, like, you, like, as a British person from outwardly looking into the US, you guys love a bit of masculine war machinery, so
you're not wrong. I mean, I definitely see, like, if we had a choice between cloning a woman into a giant monster or cloning a dude into a giant monster, we'd probably, like, pick a dude, you know?
Women are too fragile.
AV Unit 3 is an interesting design. It has a lot of similarities to, like, honestly, Unit 2, which is, like, the combat-ready version. But it's got this purple color palette with these white highlights across it. It's got much more armored knuckles, which is cool.
Yeah.
And like I said, its torso, like its waist and torso are more like, you know, similar in shape, as opposed to having like that kind of like hourglass figure, that emaciated look that a lot of the other Avas have.
I don't think there is an Ava who I don't like the design of, but like, this is definitely a really striking look, and especially the head is really quite unique. It's kind of reminds me a bit of a dinosaur or something. It's very, very aggressive. Like, well, obviously all of them are aggressive, but this one is very, it looks like it is built for like a full on fight and quite intimidating.
It's got the pointy chin of like AV Unit 0, It's got the flat top of AVA unit 00, the prototype, but it still has two like humanoid eyes, and it's much more heavily armored in the skull, which doesn't end up mattering at all because it takes one solid punch to get through that thing, let me tell you. But yeah, I love it for its color palette. One thing I also really like is that it fits Suzuhara's color palette. You know, he's got like that purple windbreaker, you know, that he always has with the white little triangular patches on it. So I don't know if like that was, you know, they were just like, well, it's, you know, we always see him wearing this jacket, so we'll make sure to spray paint it that color before we send it to Japan.
Yeah, the in-universe reason for that probably probably kind of...
It's
like that.
But yeah, oh gosh. Sorry.
That's all right.
Big old truck. That's how you can tell I'm in Texas. But yeah, I really love this design. I love the look of it. And I'm frankly, the only downside is I'm sad that like it immediately got infected and became evil.
Yeah.
I wish there was like one fight sequence where it was like we got to see it in action. But I mean, you know, for narrative purposes, I'm totally cool with it. Oh, also, it still has the big old shoulder pauldrons that like Unit 2 has. But like it also like the shoulder plates itself also go forward, making these triangular flat panels on the shoulders with big spikes up top. It's just stem to stern, a really cool design.
It's definitely something they designed. They were like, kids are going to want to buy this action figure. And adults.
Let's move on to talking about some technology. We've got two that I want to talk about. One is three separate things. I want to talk about the Magi in a little bit more detail. I mentioned them in the previous episode. And I also want to talk about the dummy plug, which is confusing, interesting, but way more important to the movie than it is to this series.
Yes.
So the Magi are these three supercomputers that were based off of Ritsuko's mom's brain. She made these three like computers that have like these organic looking brains in them that were supposed to represent three aspects of her own personality. Her as a woman, Casper, her as a mother, Balthazar, and her as a scientist, Melchior. And each of these three supercomputers decide every action that Nerve takes. So regularly you'll hear them shouting, "The Magi think we should hold still," or "The Magi say we should do this." They put all of their faith into the supercomputer, which gets hacked by an angel almost immediately. And then fortunately Ritsuko is there to like disable it and like save the day. But it's very interesting. What do you think of them?
It's actually like the Magi is one of those things, which is in a lot of the stuff I write and stuff, like supercomputers that have a biological component is something I've incorporated. And the Magi, the when we get a peek inside, is just absolutely incredible. Like the wiring, the fake looking brains and stuff. It's just, I think it's a really cool system. And like having it, I do like that this show does spend a lot of time, women and motherhood and, femininity is like a huge part of the show. It runs through the themes of like the designs of the robots and I do like that like, you know, that it's like a mother's guiding hand, like guiding them through, and like, not to get whimsical in air. I love the match. I love that it's got three different components and each one represents a different thing. I think that's fantastic. And it's cool.
I know. I agree. I do think it's one of those things that on paper I like better than how it fully gets represented in the show. Because I think on paper, you've got this really cool idea of like... You've got this really cool idea of like these three supercomputers and they all have different aspects of a single person's like psyche. Especially someone who was like deeply messed up by what happens in the events of the show. this doesn't really get brought up that much in the actual show, but Ritsuko's mom, they show this in the show and then they like clarify it in the movie. Okay.
Yeah.
Ritsuko's mom was all about Gendo. They were hooking up.
Yep.
They would go to Bangtown after Ikari got vanished, and I'll talk about her in a bit. But after Shinji's mom went away, you know, it's a big bummer. Then baby Rei comes along, and Rei is basically Shinji clone mom, and Gendo starts putting all of his affection and attention into this like child bride? His daughter wife? It looks bad. It's a bad look, Gendo.
Yeah. You don't want to cancel Gendo on the podcast, but we are calling him out a little bit here. It's fucking weird, Gendo.
It's problematic.
It really is. He's a bit sus. I'm going to put him on blast on Twitter in a minute.
But Ritsuko's mom gets jealous of a little girl. And strangles her to death. And then it's like, oh, I got jealous of a little girl and killed her. And then she jumps off of like the high balcony inside the like Nerve supercomputer base and dies as well. There's a lot going on here. And then it's just like, anyway, like her brain makes all our decisions for us. And it's like,
we put that emotion, that like damaged a person into our computer.
Into like three supercomputers that decide stuff. And one of them is specifically as a woman and not like, you know, one's a mother, one's a scientist, one's as a woman. And it's like, which one of those wanted to kill Rei? It's just like, it's drenched with narrative potential. And it's just kind of like, yep. And then move past it.
I do think that a lot of that Evangelion introduces probably every episode that introduces something which is like one of my favorite ideas ever, and it isn't developed, it's more implied.
Yes.
And even though I love the show, I will sit there, and I didn't even consider how this about the Magi, you just mentioned it. So now I'm like, oh God, yeah, fuck me.
Should we trust what the Magi are saying now? Because like, the Magi sure seem like they'd be making plans that like do not benefit Rei, or maybe feel guilty and want to take care of Rei. Again, it's just like a lot of narrative potential that they just don't really like fully tackle. But
yeah,
listen, man, every great idea that gets put out in the world is another great idea that someone can utilize down the line. So it's a really, really narratively dense topic. That if you are a writer out there, think about because it's a really interesting one. Speaking of really interesting ideas, let's move on to the dummy plug. So the dummy plug becomes a boogeyman at about episode 12, I think is when they first mention it. And it's just like offhanded.
Possibly.
And then in episode, after episode 15, it gets brought up again, and they basically keep kind of mentioning this dummy plug thing without really going into what it is. Then the episode right before it gets utilized in this, you know, to brutalize Shinji's psyche again, the dummy plug is this giant metal brain that takes all the combat information from and like all the synchronization data from Rei, and basically is designed to emulate a human being inside the Ava, but just a computer, to make the Ava be piloted automatically. The dummy plug is what takes over, and it's what destroys Ava Unit 3. And it's a really cool idea that I feel like, you know, stripping like just like the combat knowledge and like the like biometric data from a person and utilizing it in a war machine is again another like, wow, heavy theme, bro. That then after this episode, totally forgotten about. It's never, I think they maybe mention the dummy plug again in like a later fight, but it doesn't matter because Shinji saves the day.
Yeah, it's mentioned in the end of Evangelion. Like, ooh, I know, yeah. It's like, because obviously they utilize.
Yes. So.
Kaoru. Sorry, I'm very bad at pronouncing names, not just Japanese, English ones as well.
Totally fair. That's a running bit on Tokyo Lives, is that none of us can pronounce names right. I'm trying to be better, but
yeah, same here.
I do know that the dummy plugs are utilized in the mass production AV units because they're not being piloted by anyone, and they're these, you know, thoughtless killing machines. So the idea was clearly planted for that.
Yeah.
But then because of how the production ended up going and the kind of chaos of the last few, you know, episodes, you can tell that they were just like, whatever. So it becomes a dangling thread of an interesting concept that is not thoroughly considered. Or maybe it was.
I think almost, I've got a production book behind me. I could have a look in there, but I think almost every issue with this show can be considered like down the road of just being, there were so many ideas and so little time and everything. And the dummy plug system, let me see if I can find a page of it. I can't read Japanese though, so it's kind of irrelevant. I'll translate.
I know that that was like one of the big issues, is that Anno, towards like the second half of this, because they had one idea and then the Amshin Rikyo attacks happened.
Yeah.
So they had to basically derail an idea where an angel was going to somehow impact the train lines that we see every single day in the background of every single shot.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly they're built up to be really important. They're like a communal like transportation thing. Infiltration and infection becomes like a really important tool that the angels utilize. So it's clear they wanted to do something with that. And then, you know, because of the
attack happened.
They basically like kind of, you know, they pulled back from that. And then like Anno was writing each episode week by week. So in one aspect that was like, we got way more raw emotional thoughts, which works to its advantage in some episodes. But because of that, you have this kind of like hurried production where you can't decide like, I'm going to introduce Chekhov's gun, and now in episode 20, he's going to finally shoot someone. Instead, you have this like Chekhov's gun, Chekhov's gun, Chekhov's gun. Oh no, it's a whole Chekhov's armory. And now I've got to finish the show. Well, all these other like guns I introduced aren't really as important as like the one narrative that I really want to talk about. And since we're right at the end, I'll just talk about that, is what it feels like.
Yeah, I can understand that. I've actually never considered that interpretation of how that subway attack probably changed everything. Like, it's just, you hear so much about how this show is a masterpiece that was constructed on the fly as it goes. And it just, when you look deep into it, the amount of things that are dropped and picked up and the amount of underdeveloped ideas, it's just insane that what we've got is as cohesive and like interesting and well-developed as it is. And even if, you know, we don't get as much development on the dummy plug, sadly, we at least we got some cool fights and everything else along the way.
No. And like, that's the thing is, again, like I said, I think every good idea is worth considering.
And
that's one of the things with the show, is if you need to pay attention enough to understand all these really neat ideas, but you need to be divorced enough from it to understand that the real important thing is Shinji's story, even though you have these red threads dotting the map that are loud and, you know, eye-catching, but they're not what ends up being really narratively important. So again, really fun to consider, but you need to be able to take a step back and possibly by the third viewing, just be like, oh yeah, that cool idea. Moving on. Do you want to move on to our favorite and least favorite moments?
Sure thing. Why not?
Do you want to go first? Because I literally list out everything that I like in my favorite moment and then like actually talk about my favorite moment. Or do you want me to jump in?
I mean, my favorite moment from these episodes is probably, I'm like quite a big fan of when the Eva's bodies like sort of manipulate themselves, and when Unit 3's arms just get really long, strangling, and we get to see the raw power and the way it jumps and moves. Oh, it's just incredible. Yeah. And like the ant, like, even though a lot of the themes and stuff I love, but I just can't get over with this show how amazing everything looks when it moves, especially the machinery and the sound effects. And we've already spoken about one of the about Unit 1 breaking out of the angel and stuff, and the introspective conversation. I love that. So those are sort of my quick list of my favorites. There's quite a lot that I love in these three episodes.
There is some of the best movement in like in anime in this show.
Yes.
And like, man, the fight with Unit 3, even though it's sparse, has some of the most iconic shots and iconic like movements in anime history. Like, it's the like shadowy look of like Eva Unit 3 with the sun behind it is like,
oh, it's pretty incredible.
Like horrifying, but like also like so radical. So I'll say that there are a sea of amazing moments, from ripping out of the angel, in episode 16, Unit 4's mysterious destruction and like showing the satellite footage with you know, like they're going second by second and they're showing the explosion expand out. And then like the impact is so massive that the satellite feed cuts out and then cuts back on. And there's just a hole where like Utah used to be. Unit 3 being transported via crucifixion. Mwah, absolute art. And obviously the destruction scene of AV Unit 3 and the blood and like organs hanging off of things is so, again, iconic. Like those are all great scenes, but my absolute favorite moment is the crystallized expression of something that absolutely haunted me as an anxious teen, which is that the fear you see in someone else's heart, you know, or the like fear you have of being seen, and how you're perceived in another person's heart. And Shinji talking to Lilleel, or talking to an aspect of himself, however it ended up being like interpreted, is one of the most important moments in the anime and one of the most like impactful, where I'm just like, man, I wish I had understood this as a kid. I can't tell you the number of times in high school I was like, wow, I wish I was psychic. I wish I could read people's minds. I wish I knew what people were thinking about me. I'm, you know, like just like constantly had this feeling of like, you know, like I wish I understood what everyone feels, because then I would be cool and they would perceive me the way that I perceive myself. It was selfish. Yeah. It was not a great idea. And I think the apoesis of this show of saying, and I'll get to that in more detail in the last episode, is basically just saying like, hey, you can't control that. They're just as real as you are, as your perception of yourself. The only thing you can do is move forward. And like, boy, howdy, I wish I had have like understood that message when I was younger. Cause like when it happens in the show, it's just like weird imagery shoo, and it flies over your head and then you're like, cool, another destruction scene. But boy, is it like as an adult, primo.
Yeah. It's the sort of thing that if I ever had kids, which I highly doubt, but if I did as a teenager, I'd love to sit them down and sort of like show them that and sort of explain it to them.
Yeah.
That everybody goes through this. Yeah. And some people go through it more. Obviously, as somebody who suffers from anxiety and some depression, with my anxiety, I do worry a lot about how people perceive me a lot. Like even now. And it's always good to sort of come to terms with there's like the messages that this moment hammers in.
Absolutely. So as with every high, there must be a low. With every mountain, there must be a valley. And so I think it's time for us to talk about our least favorite moments. I'll go ahead and just say that like these episodes are real good. Real, real good. And it was kind of a struggle for me to find something I disliked. And it's something that I disliked on my very first viewing and I still dislike now. And that's the fact that Suzuhara, first off, they're like, we can't tell Shinji. We absolutely can't tell Shinji. And I understand now that the reason they're saying that is like, oh, Shinji's like all high on his own supply. And if we tell him that like another boy is going to pilot an Ava, he might get sad. I guess is kind of what I think they're trying to imply, because they have a whole scene where like Ritsuko and Misato are talking. And they're like, should we tell him? No, he wouldn't be able to handle it, because we're like, you know, Rei and Asuka are different people, but Toji's his friend and he wouldn't be able to handle it. And it's like, but why though? I don't quite understand that. And I feel like because his character arc ends basically at the beginning of the next episode, which is just, I'm still alive and I'm in a hospital, the end. It just seems like, I don't know, it feels left unfulfilled. Oh my gosh, I forgot to mention that, like, maybe his sister's soul is in the Ava. I think that's the implication.
That the fact they say they moved her to a new location sort of implies that they were like, I mean, I know nothing is in concrete.
Yeah.
The fact that the biggest concrete soul being in an Ava is Shinji's mom.
Yes.
Well, and if nobody's watched the show.
Yeah. And we know that Asuka's mom's soul, half of it at least, is in the Ava as well. Yeah. So clearly they need a soul of a human that has some kind of vital component. And they basically say, like, okay, out of all the candidates, there's only one that's easily ready to be implanted in it.
Yes.
There's only one candidate, and the only person in all of Shinji's school that has like a relative that we talk about at length is the injured sister. And then they say, well, hey, listen, if you decide to become a pilot, we'll move your sister to a special facility where we can treat her. And I was like, I was watching it this morning, and like, I've seen this show multiple times. I've never come to that conclusion before, but watching it today, I was like, wow, that's so much. That's such a wild idea. Did they just walk away from that? Did they never touch that ever again? Because like, the process had some disastrous consequences for both like Shinji's mom and definitely Asuka's mom. Yes, whatever they do to like soul suck a person doesn't seem great. And they did it to a little girl. They did it to a child maybe, but it's hard to tell. If they even did it at first, I don't know, man. That was just my interpretation of watching this most recent episode. It seems dark, and boy, I wish that was like as narratively impactful as the weight of the like topic is.
It's one of those things where like I've sort of thought about it before, but until you mentioned it today and sort of like I had a closer look at it, I was like, actually that could. Like, Nerve are terrible, are absolutely terrible. Like, we're under no impression that anybody is a good guy in this.
Yeah.
And, it's not beyond them. I could see them doing it. And who knows, like, because I know that a lot of the kids from Tokyo 3, I can't remember off the top of my head, there's a lot of them have gone through some sort of traumatic event. And had something traumatic happened to them. So is there just, like, 100 souls that Nerve has just hoovered up, like the Ghostbusters, and shoved into EVA units? And it's just, it's scary.
It really is. And, like, again, that's a really interesting topic that doesn't get explored. And, like, the implication is there, obviously, but that's not important to the story. And it's like in any other anime that has been written in the history of the world, that would be like the most like diabolical villain scheme. And like, you would be like, oh my gosh, like now we know how evil things are. But Shinji is so removed from the mystery element of the show. And then because Suzuhara gets taken out of the picture, like, wait, what happened? Like, again, it's just one of those things where it's like a really fun idea that then doesn't get utilized. And these episodes are when the threads begin to unravel, I think. When, and I don't know if this is right when, like, Because I know it was around like episode 20 when like, or before when Amshin Rikyo did their sarin gas attack. And I think that's when like they started to have to like frantically write the episodes as they were going along. So I'm wondering if these were threads that they wanted to utilize or talk about and then they just couldn't. But yeah, that my least favorite moment is narrative potential not utilized, I guess.
Yes. Yeah, I would agree with you. Like, there is so much in Evangelion that... I find it interesting how we both have different pronunciations of the show's title.
Sorry,
like,
UK
and US. No, US and UK, there is a little bit of a different pronunciation. I've always gone Evangelion. Some people go Evangelion. It's just, it's just how it is. It's very strange... like local dialect thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's one of the best one of the things about the show is there's a lot of like, and you know, the amount of retellings we've had of it now, manga and films and like alternative endings and stuff.
Yeah.
You'd think that we would have had all these threads developed more, but we haven't. And
yeah,
I don't know if I blame them. I think it's okay to focus in on the stuff that works and develop that further, but yeah, I know that Anno is done with the series now, and cannot blame him. You know, it's been 30 years, so. But yeah, I would agree with you. My least favorite moment is probably lack of
closure,
development of some issues.
And
which is funny because that's probably one of the themes of the show is lack of closure. the show's given me therapy. And the whole thing about Shinji not being told, like, I know I spoke to you about like sometimes we just don't know when to tell somebody, but
yeah,
it does seem weird how it just is completely danced around and he never really like hears a whisper. Like he had to get to Nerve during episode 18, get in his in unit 1.
Yeah.
And nobody was even talking about it. You'd think people would be talking about it.
Like,
it
oh,
does
wow.
seem a bit.
Yeah.
Do you not know? Yeah. It's strange.
Yeah. It definitely, like, I wish they had have said, we can't tell Shinji because, like, his synchronization rates are already falling.
Yes. Yeah,
and we're
exactly.
worried
Simple
that
explanation.
More stress would, like, you know, after whatever happened to him in there, we don't trust him because, like, he may be infected by the angel. You know,
yeah,
any
exactly,
kind of,
exactly.
like, moment where there was a communication that specifically says there's a reason why. Because I get his reaction at the end. I totally understand.
Yeah. 100%.
Him freaking out about it absolutely makes sense. You know, what I don't understand is the, because it would have been the same either way. If he knew it was Suzuhara when he got over, because they didn't tell him what the enemy was. They're just like, an angel's attacking. And he's like, okay, runs out there. And then like, you know, Asuka and Rei see it first and then he sees it. Mm-hmm. And like him being like, oh my gosh, there's a pilot in there that might be a kid is less impactful than, oh my gosh, my friend's in there. I've got to try and save him, you know?
Yes.
And not being able like to defend himself would be just as impactful, if not more so, I think, personally. So it's a little, a swing and a miss for me.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's in the long scheme of things, it doesn't impact my enjoyment of the show that much, but
yeah.
I also do think that there would definitely be something to him holding back because he knows his friends in there, other than just a person. But then it speaks to how Shinji is like empathetic and like at his heart, a
even
good
if
person.
He doesn't know. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's, you know, like, I would rather be killed than be a murderer is like one of his lines.
Yes.
And that, like, that moment is really, really impactful and telling of his character. He's a good kid, you know, a lot, like a lot of the times he's kind of like, you know, everyone's like, good robot, Shinji, stop being a wimp. He's just a kid. Like,
yeah. I've never got that criticism of, to be honest. I've always,
they definitely make him more, less likable in End of Evangelion, but he is like truly traumatized by that point. So
yes. Yeah. The kid's got some damage. And I do think, personally, I find, this is just a quick side note. When I watch a show, I've watched the original dubs. I've watched the original like broadcasts pirated online. And now I've watched the Netflix ones quite a few times. And I know there's probably some big fans who are listening like, oh my God, how can you watch the Netflix version? It's like, they're easily accessible to me. Yeah. I'm going to watch them. Like, I hate to say it, but if they're there, I'm going to watch it. I'm not going to go online and try and find pirated versions again.
Yeah.
But you can definitely, I think one of the things with Shinji is I emphasize more of him when, I'm not going to get in the whole dubs versus subs debate, I think. Yeah. Whatever your preference is, it's okay. But I personally find him more, like, I relate to him and empathize with him way more in Japanese than I do in English.
Huh.
It just, there's more emotion. I also feel that way about Asuka.
Yeah.
I struggle with her in English. I don't know why, but in Japanese, I relate to her and find her a lot more palatable character, and she became my favorite character. So yeah, I don't know. That's just a quick side note.
It's not really
relevant to anything.
The only time I ever watched the Japanese version was on a VHS that my friend's older brother mailed to his house with because he was living in Japan at the time, and he mailed us he would mail us VHSs of like anime, like a lot of Miyazaki stuff. So like I like watched Castle in the Sky and Mononoke like 100 times before I had any clue what the characters were saying, you know.
That's brilliant. I love that.
And like, you know, so like I saw, I think it was like, you know, they had like the first two episodes or something, first three episodes, and so I remember watching those and I was just like, cool violence, and then I would be confused by the long lack of violence, and there'd be cool violence again. So I didn't watch it until like, you know, as a teen when I was the age of Shinji, so it should have had like more of an impact on me, but like,
yeah, definitely
I was a dumb teen and I was like, where are the anime boobs? Where's the punching?
Literally me. Like, that's the only reason I like went around pirating the show, because I was like, I heard this really cool violence and you may get to see some boobs. And when you're a kid, that is all I cared about at like 13 was like, I just need to see some boobs and some blood. That's all I want to see.
And now, as an adult, I'm like, but why boobs and blood? Why? I'm very philosophical about it now.
I love that. Pondering the question with a glass of wine in one hand. The boobs and the blood. Why?
But yeah.
It's brilliant.
Speaking of brilliant.
I've got a tear in my eye.
Speaking of brilliant and speaking of tears in my eyes, we've come to the end of the episode and you have been absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for joining. You. I had a hoot talking about these episodes with you, and I look forward to doing more signals with you in the future.
I hope so. I've really enjoyed coming on.
Where can people find more of you and your works?
The best place to find me, unfortunately, is Twitter.
the cursed place, the hell site.
I got an audience there somehow, so maybe I'm cursed. At RevisedDan on Twitter is probably the best place to find me. I do have a Patreon for my art, but it's not compulsory. I'm not going to, and I'll just sort of plug that's there. And I've got a YouTube, but there's nothing really on it. So yeah, it's just Twitter. I don't use Instagram. Come and watch my ramblings.
Awesome. I'll provide a link in the description.
Thank
you so much again for joining, and I'll see you all on the next Tokyo Signals, signing off for now. And I have this fun music start playing.
This concludes this test of the emergency broadcast system.